Hi everyone, thanks for coming. I just wanted to warn you that I have a terrible cold, so hopefully I won't start coughing in the middle of this presentation. Before I begin, I just want to thank my co-authors, Karen Bogan from the Center for Survey Research at University of Massachusetts Boston, and my colleague Anita Albright at the Department of Health in Massachusetts. And no financial relationships of commercial interest, but so when we began writing this presentation and we wrote the abstract, the primary, two objectives. One was to examine the unmet needs for home and community-based services among a specific group of adults with disabilities, those who are 18 to 59, those who live in Massachusetts. Sorry. Is this better? No? Better? Okay, sorry. So when we began this presentation, writing the presentation, the two primary objectives was, one, to examine the unmet needs for home and community-based services for a specific group of adults. Adults with disabilities who were living in the community in Massachusetts and who were 18 to 59 years of age. And the second part was to, we wanted to further examine what are the impacts or what are the associations of, in terms of health risk behaviors, health status, and access to care of those who have an unmet need. And as I was thinking about this presentation yesterday, I realized, you know what, enough of data. Let me also, while I'm going through the slides, really give you the background a little bit more. And really, being from the health department, sort of talk about this interaction between advocacy, research, and the formation of public policy. Just to give you some of the nuances, the intricacies, the difficulties almost. And so, a couple of years ago, the Disability Policy Consortium, which is a major advocacy group in Massachusetts, they have been working with our legislators and the legislative staff, trying to get services for a group of for people with disabilities who had adult onset disabilities, and who had aged out of the sort of the children's services world, so who were 18 and over, and who hadn't aged into the 60 and over that set of services. So while they've been working with this, one of the issues that have come up from the legislative staff has been about the woodworking effect, which is, we start providing services to people who, sort of don't meet the Department of Developmental Disabilities, who don't meet the DMH criteria, and, there's going to be a woodworking effect. All these people are going to come out and ask for services, and so, the state is going to go broke. So then the Disability Policy Consortium really wanted to try and get an estimate of what is it in terms of what's the prevalence of these services, what is the need for these services. And so they advocated for putting in $120,000 in the legislation for a study of home and community-based services of individuals and families with neurologically and physically disabled adults under 65. Now, notice the language. I mean, it's trying to exclude people with psychiatric, with the mental health disabilities, as well as people who are, they also wanted to exclude people who had a disability at birth. And so, in terms of formulating this, we really worked with the Disability Policy Consortium, the Adult Onset Disability Consortium, which was the commission, which was made up of, different, like the MS Society, Parkinson's, Spinal Cord Injury Association, all these sort of major, sort of diagnosis-specific groups that are in Massachusetts, as well as our very own advisory committee. And there's a lot of overlap between the last three groups, but, they, from the beginning to currently, we're working sort of hand-in-hand with these groups. So the original sampling strategy when we first met was to do the standalone data collection that represents this population. And quickly, I think we realized, one is that if you look at the rosters of all these, the membership lists of these organizations, they range from, the MS Society had a very complete, very organized list, very updated. So it was easy to be able to, you know, extract from that list. But for other organizations, it was different. And one of the issues was they did not differentiate between people who had the particular disability diagnosis and people who had called in for information, donors, you know, and the lists weren't updated. So it would be a tremendous amount of resources we would have had to spend just to, you know, kind of extract from that those rosters. And the issue that really, you know, the sort of the larger issue was that of privacy. You know, when it came down to it, much as they wanted to get an idea of what the unmet needs of services were for their populations, they realized that they could not share their membership lists. So that was sort of the last straw, and, you know, said, okay, we really cannot do this. It would take a lot of effort and years probably before we got to any actual data collection. So finally, we resorted to the good old BRFSS. And we did a subsample of the BRFSS of those who said that they had a disability based on the two core criteria from you know, the two CDC core questions, as well as those who conducted the survey in English, because in Massachusetts the survey is also conducted in Spanish and Portuguese, and those who agreed to a follow-up survey. And then, of course, the age, you know, it was 18 to those who were 59 years of age. So we excluded anyone who was 60 and over. And also with this money, we decided that we would do two surveys. One was a survey of the unmet needs of adults in this population, as well as a survey of informal caregivers. Today, I'm just going to talk about the survey of the respondents with disabilities. And this, the sampling was done between June and December of last year. Most of you know what the limitations of the BRFSS, and you know the primary limitation that we found, we know, and which has you know, impact in this analysis, that it potentially underrepresents the population of adults with disabilities and their full set of needs. And this is something that, you know, for every presentation that we've done anywhere in the nation, it's, you know, it's something that we always say. It excludes people living in institutions, no proxy respondents are allowed, and, you know, the usual set of limitations. When we looked at the demographics of this population, it's largely women, educated, mostly white, and about 14% actually live alone. And it was a pretty high-functioning group. It's mostly people who had, you know, in terms of the ADL, it's mostly people with mobility limitations. And, you know, less than the average number of ADLs was like 0.7, and the average number of IADLs was 1.4. So it was a pretty high-functioning group, and just as we had expected, given sort of that it was a subsample of the BRFSS. And I just want to mention that throughout the whole survey, it's you know, at every step, we're sort of, even in terms of the content of the question and the specific questions, et cetera, it was all done very much hand in hand with the different advocacy groups. In fact, we were almost sort of this, you know, kind of this conduit between the advocacy groups and the Center for Survey Research. And we tried to stay as impartial as possible. I mean, giving content advice, but not, you know, directing the content. And so they decided that in terms of the services, they were particularly interested in these eight services: informal and formal, you know, home care, case management, information about services, medical, transportation, work accommodations, home-delivered meals, recreation and exercise. So most of the survey was on the met and unmet needs of these services. And quickly we realized that, you know, you cannot ask questions on do you receive personal care assistance. Most people don't know what personal care assistance is. You know, so you really had to translate it into, you know, do you receive any in-home care? Do you receive care from people who live with you, people who don't live with you? Do you pay for care? You know, all these questions were broken up. And in terms of those who received only formal care, it was 2.3%. That is, those who paid for their care. Those who only received informal care was 31%. Those who received both was about 6%. And, you know, 60% did not receive any care from any of these sources. Then we looked at what is the unmet needs. In terms of those people who did not receive any care, 7% of those not receiving care had a need for care. And then when we looked at the people who actually received care, what we found was 37% of those receiving care actually needed care. And 36% of that was actually more than 10 hours a week. So there was, you know, for a segment of the population, there was a, you know, substantial need for, you know, additional service, additional in-home care. When we looked at case management, and again, there was this thing is how do we ask about case management? You just can't ask, do you have a need for case management? You broke it down into, you know, do you need help with tracking, services, help finding services, about the eligibility of the public benefit programs that are available in the state, or just simply helping finding caregivers. So we had to break this down, and then, you know, later on we've sort of lumped it back into these are the different types of case management services that were needed. Again, you see between 15 to 20% of this, you know, the respondents needed some help with case management services that they were currently not receiving. And then the third group was information. So 13% received information from some, you know, from social workers and case managers. 11% received information from some disability-specific organization, and 13% received information from state agencies. 34% of the population wanted information about services but did not know where to get it. And another 1 in 4 wanted information about legal rights but did not know where to get it. So we see, again, there's a substantial need for just to know where the services are. And so what we have done is, you know, there was also unmet need for medical care, but I'm sort of skipping the slide for now. But after the, you know, we got the results back, and we published 2 reports, and now when we were doing the analysis for this presentation and for, you know, further presentations with people in the community, is, you know, the Disability Policy Consortium identified, like, you know, these are the 3 most important issues for them. One was the need for home care, and so what we've done is we've collapsed anyone who has, whether they receive or do not receive care, about 18% have an unmet need for home care. In terms of, they also identify case management to be of importance, and 36% have an unmet need for whether it's help finding services, caregivers, or benefits. And finally, information, and that was the most prevalent, which was almost 40% had a need for, you know, information about services, information about legal rights. And so we've lumped, and this is just to quickly tell you, in terms of the demographics, we see it's mostly women who have an unmet need. It's mostly people who are non-white and people who are living alone. Also, in terms of the average number of ADLs and IADLs, people who had unmet needs had greater difficulty with their ADLs and their IADLs. Not very surprising at all. And the next step we did is, again, to sort of look at what is it, I guess impact is too strong a word, but, you know, what are the associations? And, you know, being in the Department of Public Health, we wanted to sort of, as we also talk to our different groups within the department, is really look at health risk behaviors, you know, whether you're talking about smoking or physical activity, whether you're looking at chronic conditions, or you're looking at some of the more indicators of health status, like fair to poor health, dissatisfied with life, or whether you get emotional support. In each of these 3 cases, and just by the way, just to do this analysis, we had to take back the follow-up survey and link it back to the main Bureau, 2007 Bureau of Assess. We find in every case, whether it's for people who had an unmet need for home care services, whether people who had an unmet need for case management services, as well as people who had an unmet need, even for information. So we found in all these 3 cases, we found people who were more likely to have have chronic conditions and a poorer quality of life. I didn't present the results of the regression, but, you know, we were in the middle of doing some, logistic regressions to look at, you know, controlling for these chronic conditions and health risk behaviors. People who have unmet need, we found, were 2 or 3 times more likely to have, you know, fair to poor health, or were, you know, somewhat more dissatisfied with life. And, you know, here again, I want to go back to this, you know, our interaction, you know, the interaction between disability and between research, you know, data collection and advocacy. And, you know, and so now we're in this step. Just last week I presented this data to, I mean, reports have been produced, but just to, you know, present the data to them so that they can ask questions. And we went back, the Department of Public Health, we went back to our group, presented this data, and now the next step is really what to do with this data. And I'll just tell you one example. For example, you know, we always talk about this is an underestimate. This is an underestimate of, you know, need underestimate. And the people, but they're, you know what, this is what it says. And being conscious of the woodworking effect, they were fine with the fact that, you know what, it's not an underestimate in the sense that this is the population that has expressed a need. And if there is a service offer, this is the population that will need the services. So in terms of data translation, they don't want to stress on the fact, just as we do in conferences and you know, writing papers, we stress on the fact that it's an underestimate. You know, at least from the conversations we've had so far, that's not where they want to go. Excuse me. The main issue there is, you know, how do they translate the data? Because they're going to go back to the legislators early next year with our help, and really to talk more about that, you know, 40% of the people just have a need for information. You know, how can they how can we put that in? How can we put some dollars in just to getting sure that people get the information, not just of service, I mean, just so that they have this information, which would benefit them. The second thing is the issues of case management. So it's really, you know, it's sort of, we're almost like, we're sitting there between the advocacy group and the legislators, and, you know, we cannot, as a Department of Public Health, cannot play any role in advocacy. And so it is just sort of being there between helping with the data translation and really helping them to inform the legislators as they write their you know, one pages and reports, and, you know, have us be there making the presentations when they go back to the State House. So hopefully next year I'll be back to tell you what happens in the next year, because that's the crucial piece is between now and I think next June is what happens and how this data is taken to the next level. So that was it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to hold questions until the end, just to let you know. Has anyone come in the room who needs a sign language interpreter? Just wanted to check on that. Okay. Okay, our next